911, what's your emergency?
Help! My house is on fire!
Oh my god, this is so sad. Hildy, play Burnin' Up by the Jonas Brothers. Welcome back to the First Risk Podcast, everybody. And hopefully you won't hear any noise on Ryan's end. But if you do, it's because of construction outside that was uncontrollable.
I would love to ask them to stop and leave, but I'm afraid that's out of my jurisdiction. I'm just a boy, and I don't think they would listen to me.
So true.
I could try and take their tools.
You could.
I might. But anyways, today we're talking about a very interesting thing that's happening at this point in the show. Jane, am I wrong? Or are we having back-to-back-to-back bangers?
I would say we're having back-to-back-to-back-to-back bangers. Okay.
Back-to-back.
I think our suspicions about season four were correct, that this is a banger of a season. Because, yes, episodes one and two were great, and episode three was also great. Today we are talking about season four, episode three, Future Tense, directed by Marita Grabiak, who I believe this was her first episode she directed, but then she went on to direct several episodes throughout the next few seasons. And it was written by Andrew Myers, our old friend, ally.
Nice.
Yeah.
Andrew, like, he locked in for this episode. I'm sorry. I don't know how else to describe it, but like, this episode really worked for me. I thought it was so fun. I thought
it's
it was so poignant when it needed to be.
It has a lot of genuinely very funny moments.
And they managed to fit so many things into the episode and without it feeling like bloat. You know what I mean? Like, everything felt really balanced.
You guys, I love how depressed and complaining we were last season. And now so far this season, it's like a nonstop glaze fest. But, you know, such are the ups and downs of life.
I will say this. I'm choosing to, like, indulge in it extra hard this season because I know that this is probably going to be the last wall-to-wall glaze fest we're going to have with this show.
Damn.
And so I'm just like, let's just take it where we can get it. I'm not saying that for certain season five might pleasantly surprise me. Who knows?
Sure.
I might even come around and say season eight's the best season of the show. Why was I complaining in the first place?
Imagine if we did a switch up like that. I mean, I remember enjoying a lot of season eight on its own. And then when I kind of realized towards the end that none of the open threads were going to be resolved, I was like, okay, maybe it actually wasn't really all leading to something. But you know what? Let's not get caught up in the troubles, the depression, the difficult things of the present. Let's focus on, well, this episode is about the future, supposedly, but let's focus right now on our beautiful past. Season four of 911.
Some philosophers would say that all of those things are one and the same.
No, that messes with my idea of how I perceive my life.
But Jane, what if the past never existed in the first place?
Anyway, we open with an interesting scene, a bit of a cold open. We've got this man waking up in his highly advanced smart home. He lives in a smart home run by a technology called Hildy.
This HAL 9000 ass setup.
Yes.
I was immediately roped in. I'm like, it's like that episode of The Simpsons. Like, did you watch the Treehouse of Horror growing up every Halloween?
Oh yeah.
And do you remember that one where they get like sort of like a 2001 style smart home AI thing that starts to try and kill the family?
Because
he falls in love with Marge. that's what I was immediately ringing the bells on here. But there's a twist, okay? Because he wakes up and he has this smart home named Hildy.
Hildy is kind of like a pastiche of Alexa, although it's kind of an amalgam of a few different like modern technology things, because Hildy is both like the Alexa style personality/voice controlling the house and apparently the name of like the entire technology system running all of this tech.
So here's a question for you before we get into the episode like details and events. Here's a question for you. When was the last time you used Siri?
I never even used it when it was a thing that everybody used. I just didn't get the hang of it. I prefer to just like type out a question than ask my phone lady.
It's a strange thing because it seems like the only people who actively use Siri are like old people. Like, my boss is 64 and he uses Siri for everything. Mm-hmm. I can't even get her to activate when I want her to now.
To be fair, I think that Hildy is more based on Alexa, which I think more people do use. I don't own That's any true. Alexa devices because I'm already convinced my phone is listening to me. And I'm like, why would I put an active, obvious secret agent in my home to listen to me even more?
Because what if you want to listen to a little Carole King while you're doing the dishes? And you
can't
don't have
be bothered to take the 5 seconds to pull it up on your phone with your hand.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so much more fun to say, Alexa, play Tapestry.
I hope everybody who's listening to this, like, out loud with their Alexa in the room just had Tapestry start playing.
I hope so, too, because it's a great album. And our listeners need culture. So the thing about this Hildy, because he wakes up, he greets Hildy. She's like his little AI companion. It's it's, you know, her seeds. For anyone who's seen the Joaquin Phoenix, Scarlett Johansson movie, Her. Great movie. Hildy is, like, not doing her job very well. He wakes up, the AC's blasting. He has her brew some coffee, and she's incompetent brewing the coffee. He says play happy music. She starts playing death metal, which is my roommate's a big metalhead, so that would have worked for him. And then he steps into the shower, and he even has like the smart house like control the shower.
I feel like you're kind of, obviously we eventually see that someone is sabotaging his Hildy, but I do feel like if you intentionally intertwine technology with your life to this extent, you are kind of asking for it.
Yeah, not to victim blame.
Not to victim blame. I also want to point out this moment that when Hildy starts malfunctioning, we like see the little control screen and they have this little, they like have a little image of the shrugging girl emoji on it. Like, to just be like, sorry, I don't know what's going on. And I just thought that was really funny. Like,
Hildy has personality.
Hildy's like, I'm just a girl. But yes, this guy starts to get into the shower. Hildy's like, setting your shower at 99 degrees or whatever. And at this point, we start to see someone else is watching. There's like a woman watching this camera feed of his bathroom, which is a crazy thing to have a camera feed of. She's watching from a different location, apparently.
Not to victim blame too hard, but I understand why you might have security cameras in your house if you're, I don't know, wealthy and you're that kind of person. But why would you have one in your bathroom in full view of your walk-in shower?
Yeah, it's odd. But we've got this lady
who
seems to have...
I have questions about this guy.
We've got this lady watching from afar who seems to have a bit of a bone to pick with our guy, because she's like looking at the screen. She's like, screw you, Anthony. And she like starts raising the temperature in the shower, which this is so deranged. Like, she's not just pulling like harmless pranks anymore. She's like, I am going to scald your skin, Anthony. And as the temperature in the shower rises and Anthony starts freaking out, he slips and falls and hits his head and is apparently like dead. I mean, we don't know, right? That's one of the risks of doing this sort of thing to get revenge on an ex, is like pranking someone in the shower is risky because they very easily could slip and die. But anyway,
whatever happened to keying his car? Whatever. Exactly. It seems like no one wants to key anyone's car anymore, right?
Exactly. And I also thought this scene, you compared it to Her earlier, something about this scene felt like something that would happen in like Gone Girl or something.
Yeah.
Like this sort of remote spying sabotage gone wrong, and like she's watching the feed. But anyway, she says, Hildy, call 911, because apparently they've said Siri, call 911 too many times on the show. Anyhow, she calls 911, Maddie picks up, and this woman is kind of struggling to, like, tell the story while also not revealing that she's been both spying on this man and, like, pranking him and doing certainly illegal things to sabotage his smartphone, smart home. So she's telling Maddie, like, yeah, send an ambulance to this address. A man has been injured. It's my boyfriend. He fell in the shower. Maddie's like, can you see if he's breathing? And she's like, funny story. I'm actually not in the room with him. I'm actually not in the house with him. I'm watching his live shower feed on my iPad. Maddie's like, that's odd. Like, do you often spy on your boyfriend in the shower? And she's like, you know, he's all alone in this smart house. I was just checking in on him.
He gave me the password. Like, I'm just checking in. It's not spying. So immediately you have the setup here. It's not just man versus man. It's also man versus machines. And
the 118 arrives.
The 118 arrives, and immediately everyone is weirded out because the home greets them, scans their face,
scans their faces,
and allows them entry. It's, oh my goodness. What a surveillance society we live in now.
Yeah.
So they make their way up to the bathroom where he's passed out, and they find that he possibly has a concussion. He also has second degree burns from the scalding 140 degree water.
They've put this great just like red makeup on him, red grease paint like blended into his shoulders. It doesn't look very convincing, but I love it.
It doesn't. It's so funny. And as you know, they're taking care of him, Eddie more than anyone is skeeved out by this whole scenario, right?
Yes.
he is a technology skeptic. He's a Luddite, as we would have said in the late 90s, early 2000s. But like, he's like, I don't even want to get that smart coffee maker that I had my eye on. It instantly says, hello, Eddie, here's coffee makers, etc. Targeted advertising, the highest example of that. And Buck is just like, Eddie, I'm gonna level with you. If you have an iPad, if you have a smartphone, if you have a laptop, and you're not covering that little, you know, webcam on the top of it, you're being surveilled. You're being surveilled.
I'm kind of obsessed with how dumb Eddie is. Because he is an interesting character where, like, he's this, 30-year-old guy? Like, he's really quite young. He's like a millennial. But at many times throughout the show, he seems to have the soul of like a much, much older person, because it's like he's never even considered this stuff before this episode. And also, I appreciate what development we get of Eddie in this episode, because as I'm often saying, my problem is that the show seems to not really care to give him a lot of personality traits or a lot of consistent characterization. And so I love when they introduce, this might be the first episode to start introducing these things in Eddie, of like him being skeptical of technology, and later on him being skeptical of superstition, spirituality and stuff. And I think that's one of the most interesting and likable facets of Eddie. I also think it kind of comes up against, I don't really like when the show tries to make him like straightforwardly religious, you know? I think his religious upbringing is obviously a part of his character, but I don't really like when the show tries to be like, oh yeah, Eddie believes in God and prays, because I'm like, I just don't think my Eddie would do that, you know? Being such
not
a
skeptic. Not my Eddie Diaz.
And I feel like it's sort of, there's friction there in the narrative of like, obviously people can have complex relationships with religion, and I understand he was probably raised in a repressive religious environment, but I'm like, I don't really like when the show tries to frame it as like, Eddie's a Catholic, and that's a normal and good part of him, not worthy of questioning. But anyway, yes, Eddie is very skeptical of technology in this episode. That's his deal. They also realized while they were checking the guy out in the shower that he apparently fell while the shower was still on. So they're like, who turned the shower off? Which leads them to Justine, the woman who has been messing with him remotely. They are like, that seems like somebody did this. We go back to like the Maddie and Justine back and forth. Maddie's kind of figuring out what's going on. She's asking some more questions. They're wheeling the guy out, and they mention something about, like, yeah, your girlfriend saved you. And he's like, no, no. And he starts, like, freaking out. Maddie, meanwhile, hears what the girlfriend has been saying. She's like, yeah, he said we needed space, but, like, that's such bullshit or whatever. And Maddie starts writing on the 911 thing, like, suspected cyber stalking. She eventually sends the cops to go meet up with Justine. Athena knocks on her door, like, we need to have a talk about your future, because this episode is called Future Tense.
Everybody drink, and then the title card. Drink. And then we do a it feels like a kind of a comedy smash cut the Grant household. Bobby and Athena are standing in the living room. And what should be, you know, toddling around the living room floor, but a cute, adorable, fuck-ass little Roomba.
It's bumping into everything. It's bumping into Athena. It's knocking over the lamp.
I have this very strange personality quirk where I just have an extreme affection for little robots that vaguely resemble animals in some way.
No, a lot of humans have the Roomba. The Roomba affection.
We had a Roomba with my old roommate, and I think we named it George, and he would just, like, toddle around, and we're just like, hey, George, oh, good boy.
I'm a little skeeved out by Roombas right now, because the last couple times I've dog sat for my cousins who have a Roomba, I was woken up in the middle of the night at one point by sounds downstairs, and I was like, oh my god, the house is being broken into. I walk down the stairs, like, heart racing, and it's coming from the kitchen. I walk into the kitchen, it's the fucking Roomba has turned on and is, like, making so much noise, just, like, knocking around into everything. I'm like, who put this Roomba on, like, a midnight timer to go off at this hour?
He just wanted a treat. He wants to go out.
So I turned him off. I killed him.
No. Don't
Speaking
put him in his crate.
Speaking of killing Roombas, well, first they're kind of talking about why they got the Roomba. Apparently May has been wanting to contribute to the house now that she's working, and Athena didn't want her to pay rent, so May bought them a Roomba, thinking it would be this great gift for her parents, right? They go back and forth a little bit about May's job. Again, we get more about, like, now Athena feels a little like she can't criticize May for taking the job now that May's revealed that she did it for her.
No, and I'm sorry. Bobby, I'm sorry. I'm still on the Roomba. It immediately knocks over a lamp. It immediately knocks over a lamp.
I already said that. It knocked over the lamp, and Bobby, as if it's like a rabid lizard that's somehow gotten into the house, he just picks it up and throws it onto the patio. But yes, they're talking about May's job, and as Athena realizes that she feels bad for, like, you know, disliking May's job now that she knows May did it for her, Bobby's like, you don't think maybe she said that on purpose? Like, maybe she outmaneuvered you a little bit? And so that's a kind of funny May giving Athena kind of a taste of her own manipulation. They hear the Roomba getting stuck outside. Bobby goes outside and says, give me your gun. He wants to shoot the Roomba.
The Midwest answer. Minnesota jumped out. And
we don't just around shooting things. I mean, I've shot before, but it wasn't a Roomba.
Doubt. And we go
we
from
use
that
Roombas
to
at Targets out at the Lock, Stock, and Barrel Gun Club.
It's good practice for I don't know, hunting I don't know, bobcats or whatever you have out there. We go to Hen. This is such, like, a funny, like, they call it the gross anatomy lab, which is
called. It's not literally.
But was that not an intentional reference to Grey's Anatomy?
No. Gross Anatomy is the name of the class, isn't it?
But it's also...
It's like a double entendre, okay. But it's like a thing, I believe. Gross Anatomy you look it up, there's a dictionary definition. The branch of anatomy that deals with the structure of organs and tissues that are visible to the naked eye. It's gross, like, big macro.
But it's also gross because it's yucky.
Right. It's kind of a double entendre that I think has been exploited in like fiction and humor before. I can't believe you thought that was a Grey's Anatomy reference.
I did. And I was like, wow, before the jump to ABC, that's crazy. Wow. Okay. So 10 is in the Grey's Anatomy lab, and they're getting ready to cut open a cadaver, a real human cadaver. There's this guy who's probably like 20 years old, you know, pre-med, whatever, like getting his little fish legs for the first time. And he's clearly never seen a dead body before.
He's about to vomit on this cadaver.
Oh my goodness. Imagine if like a doctor gets like really queasy while doing surgery and throws up inside someone's chest cavity.
That would not be good. I'll be the first to say it. That would not be good.
Do you remember when Burke in the first season left a towel inside of a woman's chest for 5 years?
Yeah.
Oh my was god. That, Burke? That was Burke.
Damn.
That was Isaiah Washington dealing with that. That's like one of those horrors that you hear about. It's like, oh, God, how invasive.
I think throwing up would be worse because that's a little harder to contain. But before we talk too much about that, one of Hen's classmates, Luis, is not feeling well. He's clearly getting queasy. Hen is like being partnered with these two classmates, both much younger than her. There's Luis, this kind of queasy guy. And then there's this girl, Sydney, who is immediately very icy, very kind of irritable, very not having it with the two of them. Hen starts to do her paramedic thing. She's like, Luis, are you having any other symptoms? Like, not, you know, dizziness, lightheadedness. And Sydney in between them is like, just shut up. Like, if he's not feeling well, take him outside. I'm trying to learn or whatever. But finally, like, as they're arguing and Luis is like not really sure he can make the first cut, Sydney just like pushes both of them aside and makes it herself. But then she faints. Okay, you talked a big game. And now who's queasy now?
Here's my question. Do we ever get an explanation, like a specific explanation as to why she fainted?
Well, we get like what she's dealing with medically later in the episode. It must just be effect from that.
It's related to that. Okay. That's what I was questioning.
Yeah. I don't know like exactly what. Yeah. But it's definitely related.
And then we go from that to another man versus a much lower tech machine. Chimney versus the IKEA crib.
Yes. Chimney, he's like rattling the crib around. It seems unstable. He's like, I think we mixed up the whatevers for the whatevers. This thing looks like a death trap. But it turns out the three of them, Chimney, Maddie, and Buck, are having a little like baby prep party. Buck is baby proofing the entire apartment, including cupboards that the baby cannot even reach. He's like, we should put some alarms on these windows. Maddie's like, we do not need the house to turn into like an impenetrable fortress. We just need like baby doors on shit. But Buck is very
imagine
concerned.
Buck being your uncle. Imagine Buck being your... No, he would be the best uncle. The most involved uncle. The most loving uncle.
He has this line in this scene that made me so much more in love with Buck than I already was, which is, I just don't want to underestimate the curious interiority of my nephew. So I don't know where that came from. Maybe we're meant to believe that that's like a result of him going to therapy. Because that is the next thing they get to. First of all, I almost felt like they were queer baiting with Buck in this scene at first, because he has this line of like, he's like, guys, I want to tell you something. I don't have a girlfriend. And they say like, I thought you were seeing someone. And he says, I am. So naturally the audience is like, a boyfriend? But then he says, a therapist.
But we saw him see his therapist, you know, the last episode.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I was kind of picturing, like, watching all this in hindsight. I'm picturing, like, the buddy shippers of 2020, like, you know, sitting up in their seats, like, eyes wide, and then going, like, a therapist. Oh.
I am seeing someone. Eddie. I mean, Dr. Melfi, or whatever her name is. So Buck, before we get to the therapy reveal, we have a little bit of interesting uncle projection happening here. Buck is so dead set on having a nephew, and he is like just rattling off, you know, because the ultrasound was inconclusive. So he's just like, I'm sure it's a nephew. And I thought of names that you could name him, maybe a Buck or a Buckley or Evan.
Chimney's like, wow, you really dug deep for those, huh? It's so goofy to go to your sibling and be like, hey, have you considered naming your child my name?
And it's like, ah, I hadn't thought of that. What a great idea. Our problem solved.
Yeah.
It's still a better name than Robert Nash Hahn.
No, but I agree.
That's neither here nor there. And then we get the therapy reveal. And Maddie gets this little smile when she finds out Buck's going to therapy, supportive big sister, etc. We find out it's not for any departmental, you know, concerns or reasons or anything. He just kind of needs to talk. You know, everyone has problems, etc. And then, you know, Maddie's smile begins to fade. It wavers slightly.
Yes. And it's like something what's going on there? Occurs to her. She feels a little concerned about, which I feel like there's no reason to immediately suspect it's something greater, but you just get this vibe that she's like, if something's going on with Buck, it might be something concerning.
It might
we don't
be
know
something.
What yet.
It
might be something. I think that's a fair bet.
And can I just say, I absolutely adore the storyline we're leading into with Buck and with Maddie, and I really love how much time they take to like sort of set up the mystery and the seeds of it here.
Yes,
because the reveal is so dramatic, and it's like they're giving it so much setup, you know, because
yeah,
it's like
and
an
it was
appropriate
interesting
amount
to me because I
for
feel
what
like
the
show
is.
Never does this, you know, they hardly ever really build up to something without revealing it right away. And I was like,
they don't even reveal
it
in this episode. They don't even reveal it in this episode.
I was kind of mourning the fact that we don't get more of that on the show because I was thinking about it. And no offense to like the Bye Buck storyline, but I was thinking about like, man, and that episode was even written by the same writer. That episode, you would think that they would lead up to Bye Buck with kind of a similar lead up as we get here, right? Like an episode or two of like, something's going on with Buck and we're not sure what yet. But they don't. It's all contained within one episode. And I realized that season 7 is a shortened season. They were on kind of more of a time crunch. But they did spend the first 3 episodes on the cruise ship storyline. And, you know, they could have planted some seeds in there other than just Tommy existing. So I was thinking about, like, man, I do kind of miss these storylines where you get a true buildup versus just, like, a dramatic thing happens in one episode and then you hope for maybe some aftermath and you may or may not get it. So I guess this would be something I hope to, yeah, this would be something I hope to see more of in the future, I guess.
Yeah. As we get that sort of wavering smile from Maddie, we cut back to med school. Miss Shayla, we find out her name is Sydney, eventually. she did not go to the hospital. She's like, I'm fine. Hen is killing the game. And Sydney is seemingly very shaken by this. Someone makes a offhand comment about paramedics. She calls paramedics she calls them Uber drivers. And and it's immediately like, hey, do you know who you're, you know, in med class with, you know?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know who your lab
Sydney
partner
is,
girl.
A very abrasive personality. And I must say, there was a moment in this scene, like, Sydney is extremely annoying, but I would be a little annoyed with some of the things Hen is doing, too. Like, there are some moments where she clearly uses... She is a paramedic. She does have experience. But, you know, there are points where... she'll be kind of over explaining something or whatever, or saying something obvious where I would have been like, oh, come on, we get it. You're a paramedic already. Like, we're all in this together. But Sydney far outweighs. Sydney is like the worst classmate ever. She's being so mean the whole time.
She's like, I don't know, Regina George without any cool factor. I'm sorry to this girl, but
yeah,
you know, that,
but
that's
no, what it
fact.
Is like, as Sydney starts to make the next cut, Hen's kind of backseat, like, doctoring, she's like, maybe go a little deeper if you want to, you know, apply a little more pressure than you think.
No, that would piss
me
off.
Do you want me to
do
it? Like, that would have pissed me off. But yes, Sydney was annoying first, so she kind of deserved it.
Mm-hmm. And they peel back the skin. It's gross. There's a lot of gross medical stuff in this episode. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they really went for it.
They peel it back, and immediately Sydney's like, ah, he died of cancer. Because there was a whole thing where Sydney was like looking at the reports or whatever to like try and like cheat the system and see what he had. even though that was the purpose of their
But obviously immediately she recognized it was
cancer, because she knows what cancer looks like, I guess. And that's right. All we get with that.
We but get like immediately from that like either in your she's mind, very either she's very good or for some reason knows a lot about cancer. We're not sure yet.
Yeah. And in your mind, like right away, you're just like, oh, I just know she has a cancer mom. I just know it.
Then we
go right back to Maddie Buckley. She shows up at Buck's loft after mm-hmm. the baby proofing party, and she says, you know, I just want to continue our conversation about your little therapy now that we're out of earshot.
Yeah, she's like, I thought maybe you weren't comfortable saying everything in front of Chimney, so if you want to talk about first it more, of all, like, let's do that
first
now.
First of all, Albert is living with Buck. Where's Albert?
Yeah, where is... He's probably out, like, picking up women or whatever Albert does.
He's not even doing that literally yet. He's probably just prowling.
Even though it is COVID. He's finding COVID-safe ways to pick up women.
Just the whole thing with Buck and his therapist made him try to up his game. And Buck like introduces the conversation with a very crazy line where he goes, it's all your fault, you know? And she's like, yeah. What? And
wild he's like, thing to say you to call,
you called me sad and lonely. and it's like, I am like, you clocked me, girl.
He's kind of just realized that even after getting closure with Abby, he still feels kind of sad and lonely. And so he feels fine, he says, but he wants to be finer, right? Which this is a very valid reason to go to therapy. If like things are generally going well, but you just don't feel quite fulfilled, or you think maybe there's something underneath the surface to address. So he's trying to emphasize to Maddie, like, you don't need to be worried. I'm not in some horrible state of mind, but I just want a little support.
I liked this introducing this because there's nothing necessarily going horrifically wrong with Buck's life. Everything's going pretty well. He's fully self-sufficient. He has a great place that he lives in. He has a great job. He has a husband and child. And yet there's just a little, you know, he just wants to talk about things. And that's a good way to lead into this because, again, like, everyone should be in therapy. And so I appreciated that. And like as they're getting to talking, the topic of mom and dad comes out.
The mysterious mom and dad.
We've only heard whispers of them in the past. We're going to find out so much more about them now, aren't we? in this episode, and especially in the following. And you know, there's this sort of weird childhood tension that lingers between them where for as much as, you know, Maddie might be able to clock that, you know, Buck is sad and lonely, he's always felt like she's not going to be the one to be able to help him with that because, you know, in his heart, he always felt that she was also deeply sad.
Ugh, it's so poignant. I love this
it
dynamic.
It really is. Oh, I do too. I love them. I love their relationship so much, and I love how much time we're spending with them this episode.
Yeah,
Just doing some real character investigations. This is a very good character investigation episode mm-hmm. four, as plot heavy as it is.
Right, but from there we go to a slightly less serious sequence where we're at a bank,
which is crazy because it's literally a bank robbery.
Well, yeah, but you know, it's one of those lighthearted bank robberies.
Yeah.
So we go
to
a bank.
He's got a little money bag and the black and white striped shirt with the bandit mask.
Guy walks into a bank. He's wearing a mask because, of course, everybody's wearing a mask. He goes up to a teller. He tries whispering to her. He's like, I have a gun. And this lady, very funnily, is like, I'm sorry, I can't hear you through the mask. And so he tries repeating it. She still can't hear him. He finally writes it down on a piece of paper. He just kind of scribbles the word gun in all caps and hands it over to her.
Passes it to her.
Right. And points like, at his gun he has. She, you know, sobers up very quickly. She starts shoveling money from the till into his bag. He's like, hurry up, hurry up.
It's a very lo-fi robbery. Very lo-fi robbery.
It is,
to the point where no one around
them
notices it's happening.
It makes you wonder, like, COVID must have emboldened some crime because, yeah, everybody was wearing masks. But I'd be curious if this was based on any real incident. But this guy, he runs off with the money and, you know, they call 911. Athena and another cop show up, and this is so weird. They're acting like exasperated with the bank's policy of like going along with any robber demands and not pursuing an armed suspect. And it's like, girl, those policies are in place so that innocent employees and patrons don't get fucking shot. Like, every business operates like that. It's not like some cowardly thing.
Well, it's true. Like, what are they gonna go after the guy? Like, I'm a bank teller. I don't know judo. What am I gonna fucking sumo wrestle him? Like, and like, you know,
that bank teller lady should have taken down the armed bank robber.
Wow, cringe. And we need to take a moment to appreciate. Because I really think it's so smart how they integrated COVID into the world of the story.
Yeah.
Because she calls 911 and right. And she goes, and Maddie's like, 911, what's your emergency? I'm at so and so bank on Cal Am whatever, and I've just been robbed. And can you describe the assailant? He was wearing a mask.
Yeah. Like, it's so, so is everybody good. Else in the world. So that's
I don't know
their
another show
here.
That integrated it into like that, like to the point of like comedy quips like that. You know
literally,
what I mean? That are like,
come on,
feel
this
very
is,
natural in the world. This
is
good.
Generational. But yeah, Athena shows up. They're like, how are we going to get this guy? But there's security footage of the getaway car driving away. And luckily, the license
the getaway
plate is just
car?
Right there. The license plate is just right there on camera. So Athena, you know, tells dispatch, like, I need you to get eyes on this license plate, this car. They track down the car and the driver. The driver's like, I didn't even enter that bank. What are you talking about? They see that he's a rideshare driver. And they're like, well, you were actually the getaway driver and you didn't even know it.
And they get, she gets a ping. I'm sorry, Jane. I tried to throw you a bone because I know you're a reputation truther, but it's fine. So
yeah, I chose not to take the Swifty bait.
She gets a ping. Athena gets a ping because she, you know, has the guy's account now. And she's like, oh, you are not that stupid. And we find out in a moment of actual insanity that
yes.
he called another Uber.
Another Uber. And so
are
as
you fucking
he...
kidding me?
No, it's so great.
And so as he's waiting for his Uber to come and pick him up, Athena finds him. The car rolls up. He goes to like get in and it's another cop with a gun pointed right at the guy. And he's like, how did you find me? And she goes, welcome to the future, sir. There's an app for that.
Okay, Athena.
I love
good one.
The one-liners. I love the
good
one-liners. I can't. This is propaganda that works on me. I'm sorry.
But then we go to a very adorable scene. Buck is playing video games with his adoptive son, Christopher. Christopher is apparently cheating, which is great. He's cheating, winning against Buck. Suddenly, Eddie comes in. He, like, first he takes the TV remote, then he goes over and he unplugs the internet modem or whatever. The game freezes. And, you know, Christopher and Buck are like, what are you doing? We were playing games. Eddie goes, we're taking a little break from the internet right now. We get one of my favorite Christopher line deliveries of all time. He incredibly adorably asks, but how am I supposed to talk to my friends? Eddie also very funnily is like, wait, you've been talking to people on this thing?
Luddite Diaz, what I wouldn't do for you, my Shayla.
This is like some of his funniest, though. I feel like he's very funny in this episode. Like he's doing very funny kind of fish out of water, like dumb guy acting.
Because the Eddie storyline this episode isn't a storyline. It's just like a recurring bit.
And one thing Ryan Guzman is able to do is a bit. It's arguably one of the only things he's able to do beyond beyond boogieing.
I was just gonna say beyond shaking his ass a little bit.
and mewing. But he mentions that ever since he brought up that thing about the coffee maker, everywhere he goes, you know, on his phone, it's all just ads for coffee makers. Read the news, coffee makers. So he's getting big technology anxiety, and he feels the need to unplug a little bit.
I mean, we've all been there. We've all been there. And so Christopher, he immediately tries to like circumvent this. He says to Buck, "Buck, can we go play games at your house?"
And Buck Mom shoots Buck a very stern look, and Buck's like, "Sorry, your mom said no."
Yeah. So instead, I'm going to introduce you to a real classic from our youths. You ever heard of a game called Scrabble?
You ever heard of Scrabble? But low-key, I bet both Buck and Christopher would be amazing at Scrabble. Like, they're both
amazing
kind of
at Scrabble.
Smart guys amazing. With esoteric knowledge. Eddie, on the other hand...
This is going to bite Eddie in the ass so hard. At least he had a chance with the video games. Eddie can't even tell his right foot from his left. How is he going to be able to spell out the word, like, you know, Dilophosaurus or whatever? He can't.
Yeah,
he
Buck's
going to
be pulling out weird, like, scientific terminology. So is Christopher. Meanwhile, Eddie's, like, thinking for a really long time, and then he puts out, like, A-R-M-Y. Anyway,
C-C-A-T-H-O-L-I-C, and then his finger just like lingers, like just in deep in thought on whether or not to put in K.
Catholic. Okay, we're sorry. Everybody's going to accuse me of being an Eddie hater again. Listen, no, I love this about him, okay? If I saw a scene of him being bad at Scrabble, it would endear him to me even more, infinitely more.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And someone get on that fic. But, so, Madney.
Madney. Say that.
Say that.
Maddie is crying on the couch. And
she is
who should
affected.
Walk in? Who should walk in? I cannot take Chimney seriously walking in shirtless with his insanely ripped shirtless body. I'm sorry. Because it's
He's
kind
so
of like...
hot. He's
it's kind
so
of like
hot.
The way Chimney is like kind of like a silly like comic relief character, you kind of don't expect it whenever he takes off his shirt and he's like literally the most ripped person of all time. So it kind of takes me aback every time and just feels like so much to put into a scene.
It's just a good reminder that like as much as Chimney won getting Maddie, mm-hmm. Maddie won too, okay? Yeah. Are you kidding me?
And it
they
also
are like the most beautiful couple in Los
Mr.
Angeles.
Why he was Mr. What, April? What was his month in the calendar? Yeah.
No, but like,
say that.
was he April or June? I can't recall.
It doesn't matter. But it turns out Maddie has been getting some anxiety about parenting because it's kind of this complex thing. It seems like now that she's seen Buck struggling, even though, you know, he was very adamant about how, like, he's not struggling that much, but it seems like she's gotten this idea in her head that, like, Buck didn't turn out perfect, right? And I think not only does she see Buck kind of as her first child, you know, but also, mm-hmm. also she's thinking about her parents and how they failed her and Buck, and similarly to how Chimney was having anxieties in the last episode about his bad father and whether he'll turn into a bad father, Maddie is now worried that her bad parenting will lead her to be just like them. So it's really interesting that they're both going on like the exact same journey.
And this episode is so good. Yeah. It's so good. I'm sorry. It just is. It is. And Chimney mentions that he, you know, he still hasn't met her parents, which was kind of a crazy reveal. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
He's having a baby with Maddie and he hasn't met the parents. That's interesting to me.
I guess it goes to show how distant the Buckleys are from their parents. They're really not a part of their lives for the most part.
I mean, it is true that both Maddie and Chimney are going to have to work very, very hard to, you know, not turn out like their parents, but they also have much better personalities than their parents. So that's a good foundation.
Yes.
It's hard for them to see that. And like, we know why specifically Maddie is going through it. And so that makes this even more like compelling to watch. It's like, that's a mark of, I feel like, really good, like, planting and payoff, when like you learn about like what actually went down, and it makes rewatching these scenes all the more rewarding for that reason.
Yeah.
I'm compelled not even to like say what the reveal is until we get to it next episode.
I don't think we should.
Especially because we did get a comment a while back about
you guys spoil too much, which I am sorry to that person. Like, we talked about it privately and we were like, I can see that being true. Like, it is kind of true. And I guess we kind of started the podcast just assuming that anyone listening would have watched the whole show, but that's kind of a dumb assumption to make. But I think the problem is, like, we can't really fix it now, right?
No.
There are things that I think we have irrevocably spoiled. But, yeah, it does make me want to make an effort to at least, like, season by season, try to kind of unveil things as they happen in the show for the most part.
At least big things. At least, like, big dramatic things like this, you know? Mm-hmm. Especially in a good season like this.
Right.
Because that'll make it rewarding to listen along, I think. But
hopefully.
Anyways... Chimney mews his way through comforting her, and she's like, mm-hmm. And then we get to the Henren household.
Yes.
Nia and Denny are so cute.
She is chasing
him around. Is he chasing her or is she chasing him? I think she's chasing him because
while Denny was asleep, Nia has scribbled all over Denny's face with a marker, and she's trying to keep it going. Hen comes in, she's trying to get the marker away from Nia. It's not really working. It's this sort of chaotic scene. It's early in the morning. Karen is out. She's like running errands. Yeah. Suddenly there's a knock at the door, which is like
we have to mention what Nia says in this scene, because she's chasing Denny. Hen you know, grabs her and like asks like what happened, and she goes, I made Denny pretty.
And you know what? Good for her. Future, anyway.
She has a voice like a little Muppet. It's so endearing.
She is extremely adorable.
And Hen is just stretched thin here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Hen is stretched very thin. There's a knock at the door. Denny's like, I'll answer it. And Hen is like, maybe you shouldn't. Like, you're a child and your PJ's covered in marker. But he answers it. It's the social worker. So this is kind of a... Hen gets infinitely more stressed because it's like, oh no, this social worker's coming in and seeing like a very chaotic moment in the household. She's like, we weren't expecting you. But like, that's the point. It's supposed to be an unscheduled, unannounced visit to check on the house. Hen's like, sorry, Karen's out. I was going to clean up. I didn't get a chance, whatever. But Deirdre, the social worker, is like, you know, chaos is normal family life. There's another knock at the door. And they're all like, that's weird. Deirdre goes to ask Nia to show her her room to see how she's getting on in the house. And Denny answers the door again. And this time it's Sydney. It's the mean classmate, which she's like, why does this child have marker on his face?
It's even funnier and more deadpan than that. Hen goes, Sydney? And she goes, someone wrote on this child's face. And Denny goes, do you know how to get it off? And she suggests nail polish remover.
She tells a child to put acetone on his face. Hen is immediately like, no, don't do that. Try soap and water and then we'll see.
She pulls a bottle of Rush out of her purse and is like, take this, kid.
It's pretty bad. Clearly, you know, you get the impression Sydney has never really interacted with children, probably. But Denny runs off to go try and get the marker off his face. Sydney explains why she's here. She's like, you know, our professor is kind of getting on, you know, breathing down my neck about us having a problem with each other in class. And like, I told him we were fine and I need you to tell him we're fine too. And Hen is kind of offended that she even showed up unannounced at all when she's already having this stressful morning. And Sydney just continues to insult her. She's like, you know, yeah, my medical school education is more important than yours. I need this. Your, you know, Hen's like, you think this isn't important to me? And she's like, what are you, like 40? You've already got a job. You've already got kids. You're married. Like, who cares if you do well at medical school? So extremely, extremely rude things to say.
Can I say something? Can I say something? And sure, you can all cancel me for this. You can, okay, all cancel me for this. I think Sydney is autism coded. I
would probably agree with that. The way she responds to Denny at the door, she seems very, yeah, blunt. Mm-hmm. She seems like she just kind of treats everybody
doesn't
the same.
Doesn't get social,
like,
cues, mm-hmm, yeah, that sort of thing. Doesn't
That's
understand like the nuances of, like, yeah.
I would,
like,
agree
so
with
you can all cancel me for that because she's awful, but like.
Well, I think that you could say that she could be autistic coded and extremely rude. Like, people can, yeah, be both. They can be one or the other. They can be neither. It's like,
exactly,
it doesn't necessarily mean that one or the other can't be true. She's not annoying because she's autistic or autistic because she's annoying. She just may be autistic and a little annoying.
I would know because, like, you know, like, I would know that autistic people can be rude because I'm never rude and I'm also not autistic. So,
oh,
you know,
okay,
jot
that explains
down.
Everything.
That explains everything. It was sarcasm, by the way.
People be like, wow, this non-autistic person speaking on autism and claims not to be rude, even though he's clearly rude.
Let me do the dash S thing, just so that I'll use a tone indicator. And so it's like the situation is clearly escalating. Hen, like, starts yelling at Sydney, like, get out. Like, I have too,
like,
much going on. This is not
rude,
okay.
Like,
you're the worst
person
in the world. I hate you. If you were driving through a stoplight, I would hit you with my ambulance and watch you die. And then imagine, the social worker comes out with Denny's washed face. The marker just came off. And
it must have been that washable Crayola.
Yeah, and Nia, she's like, Mama Hen, why are you mad or whatever? I don't know.
Well, it's funny as everybody, like, walks out of the room. She, first of all, she, like, slams the door in Sydney's face. As everybody walks to the other room, because Hen's like, oh, I'll make you some coffee, whatever. Nia says, like, Mama Hen, bad. Like, she's telling her, like, you did a bad thing, which is funny.
She's so sweet. Oh, Nia.
Now we cut to a very interesting scene where we're at the fire station and the 118 is, like, watching this random footage of these wildfires in Texas. They're watching this on the news. They're hearing about a recent volcano eruption
in Texas mentioned.
And this is such a weird scene because it's like, why do they care? You know, like, why are they watching? Why did they take time out of the episode to show these people just, like, watching the news about Texas on the TV? That was weird. But Jimmy rightfully turns the TV off. He's like, fuck this. He starts talking to Buck and he's like, you can stop me if this is too personal, but I kind of want to know what the deal is with your parents. Like, why do you and Maddie never talk about them? How badly did they fuck you up? Whatever. And Buck is like, well, there's no, like, big family secret. They were just really emotionally distant. Like, they were in the house, mm-hmm. they were technically doing their job, but it always felt like they were a million miles away and that maybe they liked each other more than they liked us. But Chimney's mm-hmm. like, okay, you're sure there's no, like, big skeleton in the closet? And Buck's like, nope, just, you know, run-of-the-mill dysfunctional.
Just John Cena peeking through the green screen going, are you sure about that?
Yeah, but that's all either of them know for now. So
yeah. And then we get a lovely Athena Hen friends scene, classic scene. Ugh, they're sharing a glass of red wine.
They're
having
over this beautiful cheese plate.
Oh,
fuck!
Beautiful,
I wish
with
that
the grapes,
me.
Some almonds. Oh my goodness!
I would fuck that up right now
to be in this yard. They're listening to, like, some nice, like, R&B. It's just, like,
they're
it looks
patio.
Like the most relaxing afternoon, evening, yeah. like, possible to have.
And
Hen, you know,
needs this right now because she's venting about her annoying classmate, Sydney. She's like, you know that annoying little voice in the back of your head that tells you can't do anything right? That's Sydney. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about it. Hen, Athena assures her that she is, you know, she doesn't need to listen to that. She has everything she needs. She should be proud, in fact, of juggling so many things at once. She shouldn't feel insecure about that. She should be proud of that. And finally, Hen's like, you know, I am really exhausted, but at least I'm not the bitch who passed out in class. And they're kind of gossiping about that. And Athena's like, well, what's going on with this lady? And Hen doesn't know. But Athena's like, maybe to heal yourself, you should figure out what's going on with her. Like, you know, this wouldn't be the first time you had to diagnose someone who couldn't tell you what was wrong with them, right? That's what she does every day. Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, oh, let's treat Sydney like a patient and get to the bottom of this. Yes. This is one of those situations I feel like that can be solved with poetry. So if you'll indulge me, Jane, I'd like to get inside the mind of Henrietta Wilson by reciting a poem by a great lyricist of our generation.
Uh-oh. Well, color me intrigued. Go ahead, Ryan.
I don't want to share this space. I don't want to force a smile. This one girl taps my insecurities. Don't know if it's real or if I'm spiraling. One voice tells me that they laugh. George says, I'm just paranoid. Says he just don't see it. He's so naive. I'm embarrassed to have it, but need the sympathy. 'Cause I couldn't even beer if I tried. I'm opposite. I'm on the other side. I feel all these feelings I can't control. Oh no, don't know why. All this sympathy is just a knife. Why I can't even grit my teeth and lie. I feel all these feelings I can't control. Oh no, don't know.
Wow, is that, did you compose that?
Yeah, that's a Ryan Kearns original.
That's a Ryan original, for sure.
Shout out to the magical and enchanting, the wickedly talented Charlotte Xavier. Shout out to
her.
I
love that you felt the need to do that. So they decide that Hen's going to get to the bottom of this situation, basically. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And then
next up
we go to another very interesting scene, a very intense, interesting scene. This is okay. I love stuff like this where it's like you have a character on a phone call, and just by hearing one side of it,
right,
you know exactly what's going on the other end
about their relationship. Yeah, Maddie has decided to call her mother, which apparently she doesn't do very often. We hear they're usually texting and emailing. But she's like, yeah, the baby's fine. Nothing's wrong. We start to see, yeah, these little seeds of like the way her mother needles her, even though we're only getting Maddie's side of it. She's like, yeah, we're going to find out the sex. And then she's like, yes, we're finding out like before the baby's born. She's like, it'll still be a surprise. It's just going to be a surprise now, not later. but she's like, I want to talk to you about Evan, because of course their parents don't know him as Buck. She's like, I want to talk to you about Evan. I'm a little worried about him. Did you know he's seeing a therapist? And clearly, Mom asks something about, like, what, does he know something? Because Maddie's like, no, I don't think it's, like, anything about that. I don't think he knows anything. Like, we're just getting this this crazy mystery set up. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, there's mm-hmm. this line where she's like, well, how would you feel if you found out that, you know, everyone had been lying to you your whole life? And you're like, what? What is going on?
Damn.
Like, is Buck... I was so interested. I was, like, putting myself in the shoes, again, of somebody who was watching at the time. And I was like, I wonder what... I would love to know what people thought this was about before it was revealed, yeah. right? Did people think Buck yeah. was adopted? Did they think he was... what else could it be?
Adopted is where my mind, I think, went when I was first watching through this season.
It's kind of the most obvious answer. And it would kind of answer why Buck and Maddie don't look alike in the least.
Yeah, there's like other like things like it could be like oftentimes when a, you know, a child is born intersex, like the parents
say that too.
Will choose like a gender for the child
yeah.
and like sort of transition
them
into that at a very young age.
Forcible medical procedures. That'd be so
yeah.
tea,
which is
honestly,
very fucked
if
up.
We got the intersex Buck storyline.
Oh my god, yes, diversity win. That would have been crazy. I've never seen like a main character intersex storyline on any show except for did you ever watch the show Faking It on MTV?
No, I've heard of that.
It was, oh my god, it was like the best show ever. And there were like the mean girl character like eventually came out as intersex. And it was really cool. I had never seen a storyline like that on
The
TV
only
show
things
like
I can think of are like I remember like a really mean-spirited episode of House MD where there's like a patient who their mysterious medical, she's like a young woman and her mysterious medical thing turns out to be she's like intersex and she has like some like internal like testicles or something that are like messing with her body. And, you know, Dr. House does his typical like extremely rude thing, except it's
I'm sorry, Jane. The setup, like the lead into that was like, I remember this very mean-spirited episode of House MD. It's like, I remember this really musical episode of Glee. I remember this supernatural themed episode of Buffy.
Listen, there were some episodes of House MD that were, you know, the character was mean and he would be sassy about his reveal, but often like the actual messaging of the episode
true. I know what you mean.
I don't know what the word would be for prejudice against intersex people. I'm sure there is a specific word, but you know, I remember this scenario being pretty intersex phobic. You know, it was pretty
intersexist, I think, is the term.
Cruel.
I think it
was very cruel, very kind of seemed like it lacked an understanding of kind of the nuances of that existence. I watched a really interesting documentary at the BFI Flare Festival in 2023. I think it was called Who I Am Not. And it was this documentary about like, it followed several intersex people in, what country was it? I think maybe Nigeria. No, South Africa. It followed several intersex people in South Africa. And it was just one of the first things I saw that was like really taking the perspective of some intersex people and telling a few different types of stories from different intersex people. But anyway, we did miss out on the intersex buck storyline. That would have been much appreciated representation, but no dice. But like, what else could it have been?
Close, but
like,
no cigar. and like, this is why the reveal is so crazy, because it's not something that you would like
it's
rationally
not really
jump
what you
to, because
it's such
an insane like thing that explains so much about him.
I just thought
and
of another
his, like,
one.
His upbringing.
I just thought of another one. I've heard some people at the time thought that the reveal would be that Maddie was actually Buck's biological mother, and that it had been one of those situations where she was a very young mother, and the family covered it up and pretended that Buck was also the child of the parents, which that does happen very occasionally. It's like a
thing. It does happen.
I think more so back in the day when it was very controversial to have someone have a child out of wedlock. Sometimes families would cover that up by pretending that a daughter's child was actually the parents' child.
So that would have been crazy and dramatic. But I'm glad they didn't do that, because it would have absolutely ruined Maddie and Buck's dynamic.
Yeah,
like,
I think what's so
forever.
Great and interesting about it is that yes, Maddie was parentified, but not because she's the literal parent, but because she was parentified. And I think
it would have been like a really dense
been...
literalization that like would have just robbed a lot of their relationship of like a lot of nuance. And I really love what they went with instead. So I'm so excited to talk about it when we get to it eventually, because you'll be in London.
We'll have to figure out that time zone thing. But it's time for another fun little 911 call, because we've got a very new agey yoga instructor.
No, there's nothing fun about this one. Don't start with me, Jane.
Okay,
I love
gross
911
calls. I love them. All right, we've got a new agey yoga instructor. She's doing like an audio guided meditation or yoga session. And specifically, she gets to the part where the audio is like, now open your eyes and greet the world. And she's got her eyes closed. We can see that there's some redness around her eyes, but they're closed. She goes like, good morning, world, opens her eyes. Her vision's completely clouded over. She can't see. She's like, world, hello?
Right away,
we also see
you're
that
like
her
cataracts.
Eyes,
yeah.
Yeah, her eyes are this kind of unsettling shade of very light blue. And she goes, mm-hmm. Hildy, call 911.
I wrote down in my notes when the 118 rolls up to the apartment building, I wrote down in my notes, 118 responds with eye drops, probably. So she can't open the door, obviously, because she's gone blind. So they break down the door and they get in there and, like, girl, oh, my God, it is, like, eye stuff freaks me out so much. I have said this before. I will say it again. It's one part of the body I hope to never have anything any more medically complicated with than I already do is eye stuff. I have astigmatism and I have blurry vision, so I wear glasses. And I don't even wear contacts, okay? I don't even wear contacts because I hate anything going near my eyes. Oh, can't.
Well, I happen to have 2016 vision, which actually is better than 2020 vision. So not to brag or anything, but why would you spend so much time looking back at the election? Because they're perfect.
If you have 2016 vision, then why didn't you warn us about Hillary's loss?
I thought you needed to learn through experience.
No.
Yeah, so the 118 starts kind of asking her, like, are you using any new, like, skincare products or makeup that might be irritating your eyes or causing an allergic reaction? They ask about, like, perfumes, whatever. There is an interesting moment where she says, like, just some essential oils. And Hen is like, well, that wouldn't do this. And I just have to say, essential oils in their undiluted form, from what I understand, actually can be quite harmful and abrasive. Like, they can damage skin and stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like, you know, if somebody put the wrong kind of essential oil in their diffuser, like, that probably would have the potential to damage your eyes. But I don't think the writer of this episode of 911 knows that. Anyway, they're like, that's not it. Another crazy line.
When they're doing their little, like, first examination, their preliminary examination of her, they ask her what happened, and she goes, "I woke to greet the world, and it wasn't there." Incredible line. And so they keep asking her about, like, what she does. She says she's a yoga instructor, and they ask her what kind of yoga she teaches.
Well, and you have to say, she mentions that she's a yoga instructor. Specifically, Eddie says, what kind of yoga? Like, he already knows. And we cut to her, of course, doing goat yoga. Because, okay, I think we also skipped before this. I think it's actually before that they find, you guys, there's a worm. There's a worm in her eye.
No.
She's like, what the fuck? How did a worm get in my eye? Suddenly, Midwestern, apparently farm-savvy Bobby goes, face flies. It's a type of parasite that infects livestock, usually cows, not people. And this lady's like, I don't fucking work with cows. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But yeah, then they find out she's a yoga instructor. Eddie goes, what kind of yoga? Cut to, she was doing goat yoga. She got the face flies doing goat yoga. I wonder how many people saw this episode, and, like, I wonder if this had any observable impact on the goat yoga industry.
I mean, I tell you this, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it either. No. And I love goats. I love goats. I love, like, petting goats. I think goats are so sweet. I love goats. But going back to this, they're like,
why would you do yoga with goats? And Eddie... Notably, Eddie suddenly starts just rattling off the facts. He's like, well, people say that the baby goats are actually, like, the perfect weight for, like, the resistance or whatever. And everybody kind of looks at him and he says, I can know weird stuff too. The concept, you guys, of Eddie knowing about goat yoga. Why?
I am tapping my skull like Cynthia Erivo.
I love it. Again, this episode is so good for Eddie likable lore. Why does he know about goat yoga? In what situation did he do goat yoga? I would like to see it.
And they start picking the worms out of her eyes.
Yeah.
With tweezers. Can we just not even talk about it?
Okay, sure. You're the one who started. But Hen, there's kind of a funny moment where, like, this lady's like, maybe my sister was right. She's always saying I should grow up and get a real job instead of just teaching goat yoga. And Hen gets very fiery and passionate. You know, she's thinking about her own situation, people telling her that she's not cut out to be a med student. She's like, no, never listen to them. You are doing exactly what you should be doing. And everybody's like, damn, okay, thanks. but then suddenly Hildy is there. And she mentions, like, what does she say? Sorry, let me see. Oh, yeah. This woman, the yoga instructor, is like, maybe I should do rabbit yoga. Do rabbits have worms? I don't know. Is bunny yoga already a thing? Is that, like, an established thing?
No. I don't know.
I was just...
because Eddie said there's, like, a sort of a material benefit to goat mm-hmm. yoga because it's the perfect weight for holding a plank, and
I guess goats are calm enough to stand.
I don't know how that would work. You can't get a puppy to sit still for that long.
But I swear people do that. Anyway, when she asked that question, do rabbits have worms? Suddenly Hildy speaks up and she goes, "Do rabbits have worms? Would you like me to find out or whatever?" And Eddie immediately goes, "No," and shuts off the Hildy because he is actually, he doesn't even shut it off. He just turns over the iPad, which, once again, sweet Eddie, he's so uninformed about this stuff that he doesn't even know. He thinks he can just turn it face down and it will turn off.
Like, it's like closing a book. Like, he's like, right. First of all, he's never read a book in his life. And second of all, this is how he thinks turning off, quote unquote, turning off a book works. And so, like, by extension, kind of turning off an iPad works.
Maybe
like
he's
this
read
too.
A few of those, like, airport paperbacks that are like spy thrillers.
Oh,
and there
yeah.
are like 12 of
the
them
war.
By the same guy. Mm-hmm. And they have like the same cover art on them.
What's that guy? You know. What's that guy? Joe Johnstone that Jenny Nicholson
the
did
from
a video.
The Jenny Nicholson video. Yeah. I don't and know that he's stooping as low as Johnstone, but I think maybe some of those, like, I forget the author.
That's true. That's a good distinction. The Tom Clancy's. Or whatever.
Yeah, Tom Clancy kind of vibe.
I feel like Eddie wouldn't read Joe Johnstone, but I feel like Ryan Guzman absolutely would.
Stop. Okay.
And that's have and we the less said about that, the better.
Jesus, have we roasted him enough in this episode? Honestly, no. No, keep it coming.
No.
But then we go to a scene. First of all, that made me think. I like Eddie even more because, you know, he would be such an anti-AI crusader. Well, once he, like, mm-hmm. found out that AI existed, which he's probably going to be, like, 2 years late to that party. But, yeah, he mm-hmm. would be very skeptical. We go back to
I feel like
med
his
word...
No, I feel like... No, I, let's linger on this for a moment because we have time. Because I feel like Eddie would be anti-AI, but not for the reasons that you and I are anti-AI. He wouldn't be worried about it replacing, you know, jobs. He wouldn't be worried about the environmental impacts or the misinformation effect that AI often has. I think he would be anti-AI for some conspiratorial bullshit about Skynet based entirely on what he learned in the Terminator films. I don't think he's curious enough to learn enough about the reality of, you know, generative AI.
I think
you
underestimate Eddie. I think once he knew about it, he would think that. But I'm also reminded of that, like, tech CEO who started, like, publicly having a psychotic break where he, like, thought his AI was alive or something. Do you remember that?
I'm going to be honest. The news cycle moves so fast now.
Okay, well, there was some tech guy who started, like, publicly crashing out because he apparently, like, thought his AI was, like, a real person or something. And you have all these people who think they're, like, dating ChatGPT, right? I feel like maybe Eddie, if he's not going to be against it for the regular reasons, maybe he's against it because he believes that if you get close to it, it will, like, become a real person and then will, like, yeah, manipulate and overthrow humanity.
I need Eddie, like, to have, like, an arc where he becomes, like, a coked out Silicon Valley tech bro and, like, starts experiencing these delusions. Why do you need him to have that arc? Because it's something. It's something, Jane.
How does this tie into gay Eddie?
Well, it all leads back because he experiences ego death when he trips on shrooms at the Joshua tree.
Goes and does ayahuasca.
Exactly. And he finds himself because that's the road that this arc leads him down.
Well, it does it sound like something together. That would happen in your season 9. But anyway, we're back at med school. Yeah. It's like nighttime.
My season 10.
It's like nighttime. Hen walks into whatever their lab and finds that Sydney is there, also trying to do some late night brushing up. She's like, "Why are you here?" Sydney says she's been feeling under the weather. She can't let herself fall behind. She asks what Hen's doing there, and she says, "Well, I have a bitch lab partner who makes me feel like I'm failing all the time." And that kind of gags Sydney. She says another backhanded thing where she's like, "You know, I push myself so hard, I guess I forget that other people aren't doing the same." And it's like, girl, you're making me feel bad about myself again. Yeah. But finally, Hen notices a patch on Sydney's arm and she's like, "Are you on hormone replacement therapy?" And she's like, "Wow, most people just assume I'm trying to quit smoking." Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I skipped over. Whatever, who cares? Sorry,
it's okay. No, we'll circle back to it. Yeah. So Hen has. So Sydney keeps doing the whole backhanded compliment thing. Not backhanded compliment. The opposite. Just backhand. She just keeps backhanding Hen, just needling her a little bit. And it's like it's so clear. It's so clear just by like watching her exist that she's not even necessarily doing it on purpose. This is just who she is, which is another mark in my headcanon. And she makes this comment about like how, you know, she's not Hen. Hen is already established, etc. Sydney feels like she's, you know, so far behind her. And it feels like to Hen, it feels like, you know, she's devaluing all the work that she's put in to get to where she is, and is taking everything she's done up to this point for granted. Hen lays out very clearly, you know, she's a black lesbian who joined the LAFD at 30 and is going to medical school at 40. Like,
yeah,
she's never actually had
an easy go of it.
She's never been handed anything in her life. You know what I mean? It's just that she works really hard, and because she works really hard, she exceeds, and she excels, I should say. And because she excels, it makes it look really natural and easy because she's just that bitch. Okay.
She's that girl.
And she notices on Sydney's arm, a patch. And immediately she thinks, "Are you on HRT? Are you on hormone replacement therapy?" And Sydney's like, "Well, most people just think I quit smoking," which a nicotine patch for people like don't know about like the content of like a nicotine patch. It is like the rough equivalent of like a full pack of cigarettes, you know.
Damn.
Nicotine patches are like the real deal. So they're for like, you know,
so we should all
like
start
two pack
them.
A day smokers. that's
far more
probably
efficient
what I get
than smoking.
From vaping.
anyway, but it sounds like Hen is correct that Sydney is on HRT, which we'll get to in a second. But she mentions, like, you know, these symptoms of like the increased irritability, feeling faint, all these things could be side effects of your patch. And Sydney's like, "Well, I can't do anything about it. I've got to just like push through." Hen says, "You could talk to your doctor. You know, maybe you'd do better with the tablets. Or if you're worried about blood clots, you could use the gel." Finally, Sydney decides to come out with it. And she says, "I have the BRCA1 gene mutation," which I assume we both independently looked up.
I assume you looked up.
Okay. Well, so there are these two genes, the BRCA1. It's short for breast cancer gene 1 and breast cancer gene 2. They're genes that essentially help you, I think, either prevent or recover from or both from cancer. And everyone has two copies of these genes, but some people inherit a harmful mutation in the gene. And people who inherit that are much, much more likely to develop cancer, most notably breast and ovarian cancer. So, of course, it disproportionately affects women and people assigned female at birth. And yes, it's a high likelihood. It's like more than 60% of women who have a harmful change in those genes will develop breast cancer during their lifetime. So Sydney yeah. explains that she has this gene mutation, and therefore she recently underwent a double mastectomy and an entire, like, she had her ovaries and fallopian tubes removed. And
yeah.
Hen is like, damn, you're 20. Like, where'd you even find a doctor who would agree to do that? Because as we all know, doctors love to discriminate and say, but won't you want to have babies? How dare you try to take away your baby making factory, which makes it hard for women to get their tubes tied even when they want it done, or yeah. like get their ovaries taken out if, for example, they have like terrible side effects from periods or like various conditions that they might want to get that done for. It's very hard to find doctors who will be like, okay, I'll do this, and won't give you these extremely like outdated arguments about like, well, I have a duty not to prevent you from having biological children, which is kind of insane. But anyway, yeah. She says, like, you know, it was hard to find somebody, but I found somebody to do it. We hear that she's got the patch because of the procedures she had done. I don't really know how those things connect, but it must be some kind of follow-up treatment. And finally,
well, it's probably I mean, it's probably hormone related, because she had her, you know, her ovaries and fallopian tubes
yeah.
taken out. So that probably had some implications for her hormone balance in her body.
Yeah. But when Hen like questions like, wow, that seems like a really drastic thing to do at such a young age. She says, my mother died at 34 of cancer. My grandmother when she was 32. Like, it's about more than, this is real to me. Like, I don't just yeah. want to be the first woman in my family to go to medical school. I want to be the first one to live past 35. And that's why I push yeah. myself so hard. Like, she can't fall behind. Mm-hmm. She feels like she needs to get this done now. She doesn't know how long she has. She feels like she has like kind of a duty to her life, she feels. And so Hen finally yeah. sees the soft underbelly of Sydney, and she's like, I respect you now. We better get to work.
Mm-hmm. And they get to work, and then we get a comedy smash cut to Eddie getting a package from Skynet. So
totally consistent, this show. It is after the commercial break, to be fair. So the audience has had a moment to gather themselves.
Through the mirror,
but yes,
my mind.
An interesting scene where Eddie... Okay, can we talk about how Eddie has no survival instincts? Because why is this army veteran, who also survived a notable package bombing spree 2 seasons ago, why is he opening up mysterious giant packages that arrived at his doorstep that he didn't order?
Because he's an idiot. Happy?
Yes. So Eddie takes this package inside. He opens it up. What do you know? It's his smart Hildy coffee maker. And Christopher is kind of like shooting him glances this entire scene. And then he gets on the phone with Buck, and he's like, ladies and gentlemen, we got him. Because it turns out Buck and Christopher, this is a normal platonic thing to do to your best bro friend. Buck yeah. and Christopher conspired to buy Eddie an expensive coffee maker as a prank. And we sort of zoom in on Buck afterward in his golden hour kitchen, where he's like, hey, you're welcome.
I so wish they would have like drawn this out and like, you know, sort of like made Eddie think that like he was being gang stalked or something, to the point where he had a yeah. full psychotic break.
Like a much more insane prank from Buck. That honestly would have been yeah. hilarious. Yeah.
He's in the psych ward and Chris and Buck are just like, ah, we got him.
We got you pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
It's
a running, so that's why I say, you know, it's a running bit in the episode. It's not a storyline. I remembered it being a storyline for Eddie in this episode, but it's not. It's just a running joke.
Just a B-plot of the episode.
Good use of your Eddie Diaz, I will say.
But back at the Madney household, Chimney has been anxiously awaiting Maddie's arrival home. She gets home. He's like, you're late. She's like, it was just 20 minutes. He's like, okay, I'm sorry. I was really anxious for this. He says, like, you seem so worried lately. I want you to know, like, I'm here for you and we're in this together. You can tell me anything. And she's like, okay, what you can do is put this DVD in the DVD player, because she's just been at her ultrasound appointment and she's brought home mm-hmm. a little movie, to which Chimney mm-hmm. says, let's go watch the greatest movie ever made, which is funny. I guess he says the greatest movie we ever made. It'd be funnier if he just was like the greatest film of all time, period.
Question mark. How many movies, air quotes, have they made together? That's what I'm wondering.
It does kind of imply the existence of more.
Anyways. Question, actually, your mind went in a dirty direction.
My mind went, okay, they've been like producing award-winning micro-budget short films together, and we just
your brain did not go there. It went to what if they were vloggers. Come on.
No, my brain, you don't know my brain.
You're
okay,
right.
You're right. They go over to the couch.
That was a man moment. Wait, no, question for you.
Yes.
Because I have never been able to like make out any detail in an ultrasound. I don't know how
people do it. I have no idea how they're able to tell the sex in this scene. No, I look at it, it's absolute visual noise. I see like three different circles and I'm like, is that one the head? Sometimes if I see a more specific picture of an ultrasound or a close up or somebody points it out, I'm like, okay, I can see like that's the body, that's the head. I could never get anywhere close to like being able to identify the sex on an ultrasound.
Yeah,
but
ever.
To be fair, Maddie and Chimney are both kind of medical professionals. You know, Maddie, as a former nurse, I'm sure has identified the sex of babies in ultrasounds before. And Chimney, of course, has delivered plenty of babies. I'm sure he's seen plenty of ultrasounds. So they sit on the couch, they look at it together. Maddie's like, I'm sorry you couldn't be there for the ultrasound. He's like, it's okay. It's like, it was worth the wait. And they still can't really see what's going on with the baby. It's still, we didn't mention, there was a line earlier when they were talking about the ultrasound. They were like, yeah, they couldn't tell the sex at the last appointment because the baby was like turning away from the camera. Chimney said it was like they were mooning them.
It's a very demure child, okay? It's a
child
very crass would like
one
its privacy to be respected.
Them.
Oh, also true. Also true. Not to spoil the sex of the baby with the pronoun,
sorry,
Jane.
Sorry, everybody. Gender reveal, okay? They notice they're both like, oh, it's a girl. They say that in unison. Very corny of them, but very apt. And
I was fully expecting them to have like a sitcom moment of like, it's a girl, it's a boy, and then they look at each other.
Oh, that would have been funny. You should be writing this show.
Thank you.
Although, honestly, would have been kind of a clever thing to do if it was just truly a mystery until the baby was born.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I could do this episode better from scratch. I don't think I could. What I could do is be a damn good script supervisor. So
yeah,
provide
a few extra details here and there. But we go back to the Grant Nash household, where May is arriving home. She's a little late. She's missed dinner, but Bobby's like, it's okay. We saved you a plate. Best stepdad ever, okay?
Ever.
May mentions that the reason she was late is that she had a counseling session. She says, like, it's not because of anything specific, but because of my age and my history with the season one suicide attempt, Sue Blevins thought it was a wise idea for her to meet with a counselor once a month. And Bobby's like, you know, that's smart. Like, it's good to... in the line of work we do, to have someone to talk to.
Why is something as dramatic as a teenage suicide attempt like a piece of like deep May lore that I always forget about?
Well, because it was kind of a thing that the show moved on from very fast, and we didn't really see a whole lot of like consequences with May as a person from that. I mean, I think we will see it referenced at least more in her storylines the next couple seasons.
Referenced at least short, hopefully. It's just like, it is kind of crazy to me that like I think we talked about it in season one, but like, yeah, it was literally just an end of episode dramatic cliffhanger. And then it like never had any more narrative importance except for Athena to like
stalking a 15-year-old. Yeah, you could argue that. It, you know, good on them for wanting to bring it up at all. But yeah, Bobby's like, that's good. You know, we all need someone to talk to. I have my group, my Alcoholics Anonymous, and Athena has Dr. Sanford. To which Athena goes, oh, yeah, I actually stopped seeing her. And Bobby's like, you didn't mention that. When? She's like, you know, a few weeks ago. He's like, you didn't say anything. I wish you'd said something. She's like, oh, it didn't even occur to me. May kind of starts doing that awkward thing. She's like, when you're in that awkward position where like your parents start fighting right in front of you and you're like, but clearly clearly Bobby feels that, kind of continuing on from the previous season, that Athena is not really taking the therapy thing seriously, or like her victimization seriously, and just wants to move on. And also he's clearly troubled by her feeling like she didn't need to tell him, like, or update him on any of this stuff. He feels like she's just going it alone and leaving him out of things, which, shout out to this episode, because I'm pretty sure this is setting up a conflict that runs, like, that pays off at, like, the end of the season.
The end of the season, yeah. So begins the Bethena Rough Patch arc, you know?
Which I love the Bethena Rough Patch in this season. I think it's so well written. I think I mentioned this in my 911 video. I just think it's really grounded and real. And I was thinking about, like, we've mentioned before, like, Tim Minear seems to have this ethos where he's like, I never plan out my seasons. And I feel like this season, perhaps because of the COVID constraints, perhaps because it's a shorter season, this is one that really feels like it is like setting things up and plotting things out from the beginning. Yeah. And it's very tight and very connected. And, you know, the Buck stuff too, having this slow reveal. And I was just like, man, this season hits. It's, they decided to actually plan out a season of television, and it pays off so well.
Man, this show could be so good when they actually plan it, right? Maybe that's a modern innovation of Tim. Maybe that's a modern Tim innovation. Like, he dipped his toes into laziness in season three.
Because, season three, we didn't love either. And even, you know, even like a season two, I wouldn't say everything feels planned out from the beginning.
It was like the through line was Maddie's story. That was like the emotional sort of through line of the show.
And even that is mostly like it stretches into season 2B, but, you know, it's sort of over at a certain point.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, you know, if we're talking about Eddie again, it seems like he has no... It seems like there was nothing planned out for his character, which, to be fair, they say that his character was not supposed to be a main character, and then they decided to keep him on for longer. So that's that. But I almost wonder if season 4, perhaps Tim Minear was less present in the creative seat because he was now working on, I don't know what he was working on. There wasn't anything else going on at the time. But, you know, he was perhaps less involved. So not to just sound like all the time Tim Minear hater, but I wonder if maybe this season is actually better for a slight lack of Tim Minear's influence. I could be wrong, but I will say I don't think he's been a writer on any of the first few episodes so far.
It's a compelling hypothesis, and it's one that I greatly enjoy. And it led to a really well done season of television, as we've seen so far. So I concur. I'm looking forward to seeing how good the show gets in his absence. They start fighting. Yeah, May's, you know, she's hitting her uncomfortable child pose at the table.
May's while, like, really Bethina right in front of my bicker, salad,
right? And then we go to back to Madney in the apartment, and Chimney is all smiles. He's on cloud nine because, oh, he's having a baby girl, and he's like, should we go classic with the names, or maybe something a little more modern, a little more dangerous,
like Chicago.
Chicago.
One of my favorite
Han.
Chimney lines ever. Chicago Buckley Han. But Maddie has something more serious on her mind today. She says, I've been thinking about what you said. You were right that we're all going to be a family now, and we do need to tell each other everything. And Chimney's like, yeah, you don't have to protect me. Like, you can tell me whatever. And Maddie says, you're not the one I'm trying to protect. And it's like, that's where we leave it. But apparently she's about to tell Chimney something intense about the Buck situation. Yeah. Cut to a very strange final scene.
It's a very strange final scene because it's like one of those things where, like, you think it's going to be a cliffhanger, but then it just doesn't lead anywhere.
Apparently the LAFD has been summoned for special deployment in Texas. They're like, yeah, I signed up, but I've never gotten a call before today. Buddy are like packing up the fire truck. Hen comes out. She's like, I'm coming with you. I've never been to Texas before. Mm-hmm. So you're like,
it's
okay,
a very strange moment, you know.
They're apparently going to fight fires in Texas, which you'd think they would show, but we just don't see it. And then they just move on in the next episode. Like, nothing has happened.
They just move on in the next episode. It's, like, it's a really weird piece of, like, discontinuity in an otherwise really tightly paced season. It's kind of a strike against the season because, like,
it is. Like,
you know, everything
the
else
rest of
had
the episode,
so much payoff.
You have to you admit, know? Like, it's kind of weird that they just do this random Texas thing. And, you know, you're thinking, like, behind the scenes, was this just, like, the writer had some kind of connection to Texas, really liked Texas, wanted to throw in these references to Texas. So who knows what that's about?
Yeah, who knows?
Who
but, you know,
say?
Then the fire truck, you know, it rolls out. They have a 20-hour drive ahead of them. And then the episode just ends and you're like, oh, okay, see you guys later, I suppose.
There are dropped threads all the time in 911, and it's too bad that we have to see such a blatant one in this otherwise good season, but I guess that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Yeah. So with that, you know, thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode of the First Risk Podcast.
Do you think anyone's going to really think we're being serious and, like, leave a mean comment about, like, I can't believe you guys are so stupid as to not know about Redacted.
about nothing in particular that comes to mind. It's crazy, you know. I don't know, maybe, but I feel like maybe those people are they're just talking, and we'll just let them do it. Thank you guys for listening to this episode. A lot of good things in this episode and a lot of great things to come. If you'd like to support our show further, you can follow us on social media at First Risk Podcast, spelled how it sounds, or support us on Patreon. We just put out our most recent Patreon bonus episode where we talked about completely non-controversial, non-inflammatory subjects in a completely neutral way with no emotional, you know, impulses or no sides taken, really.
We had a few hot takes. It was kind of fun to be able to, like, air some grievances that we maybe don't feel comfortable saying in public, lest we get dogpiled.
Yeah, it was honestly a pretty therapeutic thing because I don't know about you. I'd never been at a player. I think I said this, but I'd never been a player in, like, a fandom controversy before. And so it was good to reflect on that and, like, just talk it out.
Towards the end, we do get into some Buck Tommy fandom drama and scandals, which is fun. Somebody on our Patreon sent me some details for that, which I'm very excited to pore over.
To clarify for our listeners, it's a 911 fandom autopsy.
Yeah.
That people
yes,
voted
our latest
for.
Patreon episode is a fandom autopsy. We talk about some fun fandom drama and events and whatever we see fit to talk about.
Because it's our autopsy and not yours.
Tune in next week for our coverage of season 4, episode 4, 911, What's Your Grievance? That's what it's called.
And until then, listen, just if you have a phone, if you have an Alexa, just keep an eye on it, right? And always remember, Hildy is always watching.